I want to share two thoughts. One by Rabbi Ephraim Goldberg that I heard yesterday morning when I was walking, and another one by Rav Bagno, the Rav of our shul, that I heard on Rosh Hashanah morning. But I think that they combine to help us understand a little bit more what our mindset should be going into Yom Kippur, and I guess, you know, the entire Aseres Yemei Teshuva. Our learning will be dedicated today for Refuah Shleima for Tinok Ben Batsheva. Sheva Refuah Shleima. Okay, we're going to take a look at one pasuk from Hazinu. It's probably the pasuk that everybody knows the best. Hazinu Hashemayim v'adabeira v'tish ma'aretz imrefi. So we can start off the parasha by saying Hazinu Hashemayim v'adabeira. The heavens should listen and I will speak v'tish ma'aretz imrefi. And the land should listen and to the words of my mouth. So there's a lot of questions that you could ask on it. It is poetic. So because it's poetic, there's going to be double language. There's double language throughout the entire Shirat Hazinu. But the first question is, it's a great question. If you look at the pasuk carefully, so Hazinu Hashemayim va'adabeira v'tishma ha'aretz imrei fi. So Hazinu, the word Hazinu and v'tishma are obviously are balancing each other out. And I don't know what the answer, I guess this would be another question that we could ask. I don't know what the answer would be. What's the difference between lehazin v'lishmoa? They're both to listen, but is there
listen and hear?
Right, but I'm saying, but at the end of the day, it's the same thing, right? Like right now, you're listening and hearing this shir. Is there a difference between the two of them? So again, in English, you could say that like to listen is to like to pay attention, and then to hear. I don't know, like we hear a lot of things. There's like a lot of noise in the world that we hear. I'm just not sure if we can say the same thing in Hebrew, if la'azin is more than the other or less than the other one. So I'm going to leave that as a... Say again?
If we're assuming, I'm not sure if that's... Unless we're switching, the hazinu means to hear and tishma means to listen, then... Yeah, that I guess is the whole, I guess, kind of lobash mayim. Like the shmayim can hear it, but they're not really one of it's, you know, it's on the ground that you have to listen.
It could be. So I guess I thought of the question now, but I don't know well enough what the difference is between the two of them in Hebrew to really comment. So I'm just leaving that out there as a question. So both of you could be correct. I'm not sure. But this question I do know. There is a difference between adabeira and imrei, right? The sky, how are we going to speak to the heavens? Va'adabeira. We're going to speak to the heavens, right? Or what the heavens are hearing are adabeira, or harsh speech. And the land is hearing imrei fi, the soft words of my mouth. So the first question is, what's going on there? Why is it that when we speak to the heavens, it's harsh and strong, and when we speak to the earth, it's soft and kind? So that's the first question. The second question is, which this is a question I'm sure we're all familiar with, it's Rashi's question. Why Shamayim and Aretz? Moshe Rabbeinu has the entire universe in front of him. So why does he choose Shamayim and Aretz? In fact, why does he even need Shamayim and Aretz? He's got the Jewish people. Right, they're all listening. Everyone is there. So those are, Michael, yeah.
Going back to the word Hazinu, mm-hmm. How would you, if you would break that word down? How would you break it down as because it didn't mean? I mean, maybe I'm reading it wrong, but the hay in the front seems more like the listener or something like that.
Yeah, so I'm not sure. I mean, I know that the Shorish is azan, like leha'azin, to listen. But I'm not sure. I don't know. That's
why. It's just poetic. It looks like it's just poetic, but I could be wrong.
Yeah,
this could also be, you know, Hashemayim, Shemayim, Hashem, it's not on the Adam, right? So this is, you know, the skies will open up and listen to me. You know, they'll be prepared to hear what I have to say, and it's gonna be reflected down here. When the ground here actually hears it or listens to it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So is that's trying to answer Lahazin versus Lishmoa?
Sort of both, right? Why is one reflective of the sky and the other one's reflective of the earth or the ground?
Meaning that because you're speaking to the heavens, the heavens can manage more than the earth can. Is that what you're...
Yeah, but Vetishma, it's in my feet, will manifest itself down here.
Got it. Okay, good answer. So I want to share with you the answer of the Tiferet Uziel. So the Tiferet Uziel says that when the Shamayim, right, we're referring to two types of requests. There are the heavenly requests and the earthly requests. So you can probably think of like examples of both. So a heavenly request would be that God should, make me successful in my Limud HaTorah. God should make me successful in my connection to God. God should make me successful in all my spiritual endeavors. And Aret, so it's like it sounds like God should make me, successful in well, my earthly endeavors. I should be financially successful. I should have a nice home. All of those things. So the answer that Tiferes Uziel has is that for Ruchnius, you can be forceful with God, right? God, I want to be successful in my learning. God, I want to be successful in my connection with you. You can use forceful words and say, God, you got to make this happen. It's impossible any other way. God, the world won't be the same for me if you don't make that happen. Right? We could ask in a very strong way. But when I'm asking for a raise in my salary, a good end of year bonus, the money to be able to afford to do construction, to buy a home in Israel, any of those things. So that's all gashmius, and maybe not that home in Israel, I'm not sure. But all of those things, so you can do in a much more forceful, you do it in a softer way. Right? God, please, can you give me this? Please, please. I know it's not something that's coming to me, so therefore I have to ask in a much nicer way. The Imros Tahoros, I can't pronounce the name. It's the Rachmish
Grifta.
Is your brother-in-law related to him?
Yeah.
God, I assumed so. I had to, besides like not being able to pronounce it, I was curious. So I Googled. Apparently there are four of them, maybe only three. One of them might have passed away. And they all get along, which like Wikipedia felt was like a chiddush. Yeah, it's, I don't know. Yesterday, I feel like we're recording, but still we're like a more like a homey group. Yesterday, between that and, so like spoiler alert for those that are, following, say, for Yoshua, in the Perek, Shimshon catches these foxes and like, sets fire to the fields of the Plishtim. So I was like curious, how does one go about catching a fox? Spent a little bit of time in YouTube learning that as well. I felt both of them were for the benefit of learning Torah, maybe more the foxes than the other one. But yeah, so the Imros Tahoros, what does he say? He says, actually, if you start with Ruchnius, then you can say, I only can accomplish that properly with the help of Gashmius, right? So I want to learn, but God, I can't learn 2 or 3 hours a day if I have to work 15 hours a day in a minimum wage job just to, not even put food on my table, right? So it's a beautiful, beautiful way of looking at it. So God, these are my Ruchnius goals for the year, but I could only get there if you take care of my Gashmius as well. And that's how he understands the Adabeira by Hashemayim and Imrei by Haaretz, but they are tied in. Okay, but what about the first question, the second question? Why Shamayim and Aretz? So Rashi is our first answer. You might have read or seen this answer once before, or maybe many, many times before. Shani Macha Behem Yisrael. God says that I'm warning, or Moshe says, I'm warning the Jewish people. That I'm saying that the earth and the heavens are witnesses. So question is, why choose Shemayim and Aretz as the witnesses? Amar Moshe. Moshe says, Ani basar v'dam. Let's call it how it is, Moshe says. I am flesh and blood. L'machar ani meit. tomorrow I'm going to die. And Moshe, really, I mean, it's very rare that one could say, tomorrow I'm going to die with such certainty. But Moshe can. It's like the last day of his life. So Moshe Rabbeinu says, okay, I'm going to die tomorrow. What's going to happen? The Jewish people are like, what? There was no covenant. What are you talking about? Therefore, he chooses Shemaim and Aretz. Edim Shem Kayamim Liolam. Why? Because they are eternal. Okay, so that's the first answer. Shemaim and Aretz are chosen because they're eternal. So no matter what, they will always be there to say, no, this is exactly what happened. Interesting, if anybody's familiar with the Gemara in Avodah Zarah on Yod Zayin of Elazar ben Dordai, right, the guy that made it his life's mission, did this at a chabur a few years back, he made it his life's mission to sleep with every prostitute on earth. Okay, maybe not exactly what you put in a yearbook, aspirations at the end of high school, and probably not what your mom is hoping for you growing up. But okay, this is his aspiration. He did it with a lot of passion. Yeah. He really tried. And the Gemara says that he went over seven rivers and seven mountains. It sounds like a fairy tale. And he reaches this famed prostitute, and they're about to consummate the act. And what happens? She passes gas. And she says, just like that is never going back to its source, same with you. And he like loses it. Just like interesting. And one of the things he does is he goes out and cries to the heavens and the earth, and he says, heavens and earth, can you please go and daven before God on my behalf? It's interesting that he also chooses Shamayim and Aretz as eternal things. So maybe there's a different answer to that. Maybe that's the answer that the Medrash, the Yalkut Shimoni that we'll look at next is. But okay. So that's one possibility. The ode, Rashi says, but it's also, if I'm successful, if I actually do the right thing, Jews, if you actually keep Hazinu Hashemayim V'Adaberu Tishmar Etzem Refi, if you keep this this piece of the Torah, who's going to bring the reward? It's going to be given through the Shemayim and Aretz. It is the grapes that will give their fruit, and the land will give its abundance via Shemayim Yitnu Talam, and the sky, the heavens will give their due. And also, if you don't, if the Jewish people don't listen, so it's their hands that will be Riyada Idim Tiebo Barishonat. So the witnesses that throw the stones and kill the person who sins. The skies won't give us rain, and the land won't produce what we need. And then will the nations of the world kill us. Okay, so that is Rashi. So Rashi's answer is that it's the eternal nature of the land and the sky, and also that they're the ones that are going to be ultimately giving off the reward and the punishment if you don't listen to God. Okay, so that's the Rashi. Then, that's who's quoting the Sifri, that's one Medrash. Now we're going to take a look at the Yalkut Shimoni. The Yalkut Shimoni says the following. Davar Acher, Hazinu Hashem, which means that there is a different answer out there also. It's very appropriate that we're starting off our second answer, our third answer, with the words Davar Acher. Hazinu Hashemayim. Amr lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu l'Moshe, Amor lem l'Yisrael, Yistaklu b'Shemayim Shebarati l'Shem Shchem, Shema Shinu Midatam, O Shema Gilgel Chama Yatzam Me'Rav, Shenemar V'Zarach Hashem Eshuva HaShemesh. Moshe Rabbeinu says, or God says to Moshe, tell the Jewish people the following. When you want to look and see if you should listen to me, take your inspiration from none other than the sun. If you look at the sun, what you know, what's amazing is, no matter what, the sun will always rise in the east, right, and set in the west. Doesn't make a difference if the heavens have a bad day. There's a monsoon. There's whatever weather catastrophes the world sees. The sun will still always rise in the east and set in the west. It's set like that forever. Below Odel Shesamachla, so Ritzodia. Not only that, it is happy to do that. Not only that, but the skies and the heaven, they're happy to do what I ask. It's like a chasen that's going out to the chuppah, right? No matter what. Or I shouldn't say no matter what. But 99.9% of the time, no matter how a marriage ends, at the wedding, if you watch the video, everybody's happy. Right? It's very rare, especially at the chuppah, that you right, that the chassan is going out to the chuppah and or the chassan seeing the kala coming. It's very rare you see the chassan saying, "Oh God, what have I gotten myself into?" Right? There's an excitement, something that's happening there. Have you ever seen that the land you put a seed in and it doesn't take root? So I don't know about that one. Sometimes it doesn't 100% happen, but not because nature doesn't allow it, probably because the birds eat it. But this for sure, you never plant wheat and barley comes up. It just doesn't happen. There's rules of nature. It just happens, no matter what. It never changes. It's actually not that I miss dining at the 6 o'clock minion at the Youngersville of West Hempstead, and I feel like every time I go in, I get enough of my fill for the year. But what's amazing is when you dive in that early, you actually like get to learn the calendar a little bit more than you would if you dive in any later than that, right? Because sunrise or not sunrise is not really a game changer unless you really want to daven vasikin. But zman shiyakir, when you can start putting on talis and tefillin, that actually really does matter. So I always felt like the 6 o'clock minion should have like competed in synchronized talis putting on. It's like you see the second like hit, whatever it is, and 50 talisim swing over their shoulder at exactly the same time. It's very, very, very cool, right? But what's amazing is that there's actually a calendar for 365 days a year. Richard Kulchin, even though he updates the thing, October 12th will be the same time of sunrise and whatever in 2023, 24, 25, 26. He actually gave me once a calendar from the U.S. Navy or something like that. That actually has it. Basically, it has all the 365 days a year on it. It never changes. It's always good. Why? Because that is the way nature works. So God says to the Jewish people, I've also given you a set of rules that are your nature. Now go out and do it. That's what I need from you. Okay, so that's the second answer. Rabbi Yochanan, though, in the Bereishis Rabbah, we won't look at it inside because I'd like to have a little bit more time to take a look at the last source, which is from Yonah. He says that actually it's not 100% true. If you look throughout Tanakh, even though the laws of nature are that they are what they are, they do change. But we know, does the sun once like and the sun and moon, do they once change in Tanakh? Yeah, where? Where? Sorry.
By Yericho?
Not by Yericho, but you're in the right sefer. Shemesh beGivon Dome, v'yareach be'emek ayalon. Right? It's in when Yoshua is fighting with the Givon, it's fighting to protect the Givonim. So what happens? He needs a little bit more time to beat like that confederacy of Canaanite kings. And so what happens? He begs that the sun should hold still for just a little bit. There are other examples, like the waters don't usually, like they just flow. It's one of those cool things that like real bodies of water, they never stop flowing. Well, what do we have? We have the Jordan stops, the Yamsuf splits. How does that happen? So God says, so the Medrash says that the laws of nature are the laws of nature. There is actually only one reason why God will suspend the laws of nature for you, Klal Yisrael. Okay, so that's the fourth possible answer. And perhaps that's the one that I like the most because I think it answers a fundamental question. And that is, what's the purpose of Hazinu? So this is actually an interesting one. I couldn't find this Gemara inside, but supposedly it's in Rosh Hashanah. The Gemara says that the aliyos of the entire Torah are set a specific are generally based on certain rules. The rules are that it should always start with something good and end with something good, and then the middle could be something bad. But Hazinu is actually there. We don't have any rules. There's a mesorah that these are the aliyos and where they start, and there's a mnemonic for it. And if you look, it's actually how it is, and it does not change during the week, according to some. We read Rishon, Sheni, and Shlishi in some shuls for Hazinu. Unlike, let's say, I don't know, Parshas Kitisa, Rishon is 40-something psukim, Sheni is 50-something psukim, Shlishi is very short. And yet, if you make the mistake of looking at the sitter of how long Rishon is and volunteering to lane, it's like 10 or 11 really short psukim. So for Hazinu, we don't. In fact, there's another thing, that in the Beis HaMikdash itself, they read Hazinu every Shabbos. Either the whole parsha or in a six-week cycle, they read it. What's so special about Hazinu? So perhaps the message of Hazinu is, who's the boss? Who's in charge? Okay, so now let's take a look at Yonah. So this is Perek Dalet of Yonah. It's the story of the Kikayon. So this is interesting. This actually happened to us the other week. We have a mirpeset right off the side of our house, which is a really beautiful place to enjoy the sukkah, enjoy the very hot afternoons in Beit Shemesh. But for a chunk of the year when it's not very hot, it's only hot or not hot, which are the other two seasons in Beit Shemesh. When it's like nice outside, you could sit there. It's beautiful. The only thing is that we had this tree, this massive tree, up on top of our next door neighbor, that would like give us a little bit of shade and dump these like hundreds of seeds all over our floor. So a gardener came to clean up the other side, and they ended up cleaning up our side also, and they got rid of the tree, and they told us that the tree was very, very deadly. Those little seeds are very dangerous. If you open them up, right, they can actually, they're lethal. So we asked them, what's the tree called? We're curious. So he said that the tree is a kikayon. We're like, oh, cool. So a kikayon apparently has these little seeds on them that make castor oil. But if a little child decides that, hey, what are those? And one of my children, who's not so little, started collecting them last year. We had no idea what they were. Had like thousands of them. I was like, I'm going to bring them to school. And like, we'll like have fun with our friends. Thankfully, nobody bit into them, because that would have been really castor bad. Beans.
They yeah. be used. They make weapons out of that stuff.
Yeah, so it's fascinating. We have, I'm telling you, like thousands. Thousands of them. I don't know. I had no idea. But apparently they are lethal. So we had a kikayon. But our story is that the kikayon was taken away and we were like sort of okay with it. But let's take a look at this story. Vayera el Yonah ra'agdola vayichar lo. Something bad happened to Yonah and he was really, really upset. This is that Nineveh did tshuva. It bothered him a lot. Palel Hashem, and he davens to God. Vayomar, Ana Hashem elozet varia ad heyotial ad mati al ken kidamti l'varaf tarshisha. He said, "This is why I ran away. I was not interested in this happening." Ki adati kata kel rachum v'chanun erech apayim rav chesed. I know that you are kel rachum v'chanun erech apayim rav chesed. What does that sound like? Yeah, it's like slichos. It's like a abridged version of Yod Gimel Midos, right? And there is actually Tvel Hashem Vayomer Ana Hashem. We have at least one, if not two, Hashems in the pasuk. Kal Rachum V'Chanun Erech Apayim Rav Chesed. Finish it.
Yemes.
But he doesn't finish it that way. He finishes it V'Nicham Al Ara. God, you're willing to do what? You change your mind. You're willing to look at. To look at bad and look the other way. Rachesed the Emet. What is Emet? First of all, he's Yonah ben Amitai. He's Yonah the son of truth. Does truth look at bad and be willing to look the other way? No. The very nature of Emet is that it what? It's unbending. Right? It's either right or wrong. There's really no gray in this. Interesting, just as an aside, but when you talk about a person that's honest, what do you call them in Hebrew?
Yashar.
But if you want to talk about, he's a Yashar person, what would you say?
Alec.
He's an Ish Yashar, right? How would you describe someone who is has good midos as a person?
Midos.
A bal midos, a balas midos, tovos, right? You don't say an ish midos. Why is that? This is very cool. I heard this yesterday from Rabbi Goldberg, much later in the day. Chabur was already done. But the difference is that, what's a bal? A bal is a husband. When you get married, the hope is that the marriage is going to be forever. There's no guarantees of it. So a person has good midos, they're wearing their midos like it's like a husband. It's like a spouse. It's as long as you have these midos, you're a bal midos. I don't get angry. Why? Because I'm a bal midos. But what happens when I get angry? My midos have been thrown out. He says that to be an honest person, you can't wear honesty. You either are or aren't. So it's an ish yashar, an ish ms. It's something that you wear, you don't wear. It's something that is part of your being. You either are or you're not. But v'nicham al hara, what's he doing? He's changing the way it ends and saying that you change your mind. Okay, so what happens? Because we're like running out of time here, I'll summarize the rest of the story. So God says to him, I'm sorry, I have to read a little bit more. But hasham kachna et nafshi m'meni kitov moti v'chayai. So he says, God, take my life. I'd rather be dead than alive. Vayomer Hashem, Heitev Charalach. God says, really? Are you really that angry, Yonah? And there's no answer. Vayetzi Yonah min ha'ir, vayeshev mikedem la'ir, vayos lo sham sukkah. He makes himself a sukkah there. Vayeshev tachteh batzel. And he sits in the shade. And I never noticed that. He sits in the shade, or at least I don't remember ever noticing that. It means that he had shade before the kikayon comes. The kikayon comes, it's built, and then what happens? God brings a worm. The worm eats the kikayon. He has the kikayon for the night, and he's thinking to himself, wow, this kikayon is going to be so helpful tomorrow. But in the morning, the kikayon is dead. And he gets really angry, and he says the same words again. Kach nafshi, right? Ki tov moti mechayai. My death would be better than living. And so God then says, he uses the same answer again. So what's going on here? Why does he get so upset with the kikayon, especially in light of the fact that he actually has what? He has shade already. He doesn't need the kikayon for shade because he has the sukkah for shade. What's going on here? So there's a lot of possible answers. So one possible answer is that he struggles with many... What his problem here is that he's trying to understand who's in control. If you look at Yonah's story, and this Rav Bagno said this on Rosh Hashanah in a different context. I tried really hard yesterday to remember what the context was, and I couldn't. But he said that the biggest challenge for our generation on Rosh Hashanah is to acknowledge that we're not in charge. And he uses the word from emun, which is like more than just belief, but it's like we need to understand that there is a boss of the world. Okay? That's really what we have to do. And we have to practice a lot to do that. We live in a generation where we really do believe, it's easy to believe that everything is in our control. If we do all the right things and push all the right buttons and, you know, do all the right work, everything will end well. But that's not the case. He says that like the message of Rosh Hashanah is that I acknowledge that actually God is the one that's pulling all the strings. God is the boss. And I thought that that's actually very much the idea of Hazinu Shemayim V'Taberet, Yishmayim V'Ritzim Refi. The whole message is that God is above us and God is the one that runs the world. And we just have to follow the playbook that God gives us. And Yonah's mistake is that God gives him a playbook. And it's a very painful one for him to hear. He doesn't want to go to Nineveh. He doesn't want the people of Nineveh to do tshuva. But God says, you don't really have an alternative. I'm giving you a playbook and I will force you and I will get you to admit that you'll do it. Whether it's that you're thrown into the water and swallowed by the fish and swallowed by another fish and whatever, you'll eventually come around to do that. And so that's what he's struggling with the entire time. He's struggling to acknowledge that God is ultimately the one that runs the entire show. And so I thought that perhaps that's how we could understand the whole story of Jonah, is that every one of us has a mission in life, and we have to accept it. And sometimes it's not what we want, and sometimes it's not so pleasant, and sometimes it's not so easy, but that is super important. I'll end just with one other idea. It's a nice idea I heard by Rabbi Foreman yesterday. So on the same story, he asks the question, like, what's Yonah's problem? What's Yonah really struggling with? So Yonah's trying to understand, how do we reconcile the idea of din and rachamim? Din is that, I don't know, judgment. It should be black and white. I did X, the punishment should follow. Rachamim is, I did X, but maybe there's a possibility to get me off the hook. So he says, when a judge wants to do din, what does a judge need to know? The facts. This is what happened, and therefore I will mete out this punishment. What is rachamim? What does a judge need to know to be able to give mercy? So the defendant has an opportunity to present at the end, maybe it's before the sentencing, why he deserves compassion. And so for that, what does the judge need to know? The judge needs to know the potential in the future. Says Rabbi Foreman, Rachem, you can change the nekudot around and you get the word Rechem, a womb. A womb is all about potential. What's going to come, what's going to be. I thought actually you could also reverse it and you get the word Machar, tomorrow. What's going to be tomorrow with the person? And I think that's what it's really all about. That the Yonah thinks only about rachamim, about din, but God says there's so much more. What if you could see what tomorrow is? And maybe this is my own thought. Maybe you could even take it one step further and say that's why it's a kikayon. The kikayon is there today, but it's gone tomorrow. And what Yonah is being taught by the kikayon is that it's here today, but it's gone tomorrow. But even more than that, my kikayon taught me that the kikayon might look like a beautiful tree. And it might be something that we look at and say, wow, that's something amazing. But and the seeds even look beautiful. It looks like you could ground them up and make like a nice drink or something. But it's deadly and lethal. You just don't even know it. Sometimes things look a little bit different than they do. In order to be able to see the difference, what do you need to be? You need to be God. And in order to do that, what does man have to do? Man has to acknowledge that he is simply man and God is so much more than that. I think if we could have many goals for the year, one of the goals should be constantly remembering that we could work as hard as we want and we could do as much as we can, but ultimately it's God's show and he's going to do what he knows is best for all of us. Have a good Shabbos and a Gemar Chasimah Tova. Thank you so much. And God willing.